there is a disinformation program literally for everyone, no matter who you are and what your interests are, what your beliefs are, which way you're focusing. There is a website set up just for you to take you in and to vector your thinking and your attention into the way that they want you to think.
You are listening to Radio Free Signs of the Times, broadcasting into the heart of an occupied America.
Welcome to this week's Signs of the Times podcast. After our short hiatus of a few weeks, we're back, and this week we have a guest. His name is Oliver. He's from Poland, and we're going to be discussing several topics with Oliver, chiefly to do with Poland and Eastern Europe in general, the history and what Poland is like today, what it was like under a communist rule. And we're also going to touch on American influence in the Eastern European region, the reasons for it, and the effects. And we're also going to be talking a little bit about Hungary specifically, which was in the news last week when there were protests against the Hungarian Prime Minister and some level of civil disturbance. So, Oliver, you're welcome to the Signs of the Times podcast.
Thank you for having me, and welcome everybody.
For the benefit, I suppose, mainly of our American listeners, we wanted to touch a little bit on the communist era in Poland, which you have some experience of, having grown up in it.
Yes, indeed.
And, I mean, a lot of the perception, obviously, of communism, particularly in America, has been shaped for a long time by, obviously, by the media and by the American government. What they their depiction of communism, what it was all about, is what the average American person believes. Essentially, for a long time, communists were public enemy number one in America. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of Americans obviously weren't able to relate to that directly because they didn't really ever think about it to the point of understanding that obviously there were millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people who were essentially under communist rule, but these were ordinary people. So how was life when you were growing up in Poland under a communist government? What was that like as in contrast to what you know of Western and capitalist countries?
Well, the first difference was that, I mean, I see two things. One was the external enemy, and that was mostly United States. And the other one was internal enemy. So let's say from grassroots, for people, we could see basically one enemy which was mostly spoken of by our government, and that was United States and the NATO countries. And the other one was actually perceived by the people, and that was the government itself. And the one thing which I've already spoken of, and which is which makes Eastern Europeans differ from Americans, is that they were actually living for 50 years under dictatorial rule. So communism was actually imposed on Poland in 46 and 47. So, and it was perceived as such. It was imposed system where people recognized that the government was not to be trusted, that military was not to be trusted, that politicians were not trustworthy. There were people who were telling mostly lies and propaganda. Thus, the press and the media was naturally extension of that propaganda. So ordinary people did not really trust what they were reading and seeing on the TV. They were living and they were discussing the political issues with each other, but they knew that mostly what was being said in the official media was a lie. and this was a common understanding among most people.
So people were aware that they were living under a dictatorship. They were aware that there was no freedom of press, no freedom of speech, and they could do nothing about it. That was life as it was. But you mentioned that America was seen during this time as an enemy as well. I mean, did people understand that maybe the idea of America as the enemy was also just government propaganda, or did they actually believe that?
Well, as far as I remember, this was more like the Big Brother. The Russians were telling us that Americans are our greatest enemy. But not all of the people were buying into it. And, you know, maybe in 50s and 60s when this threat was real, when there was the crisis between Cuban crisis, right, where there was a crisis between USA and Russia, then that was perceived as a threat. But as far as I remember, 70s and 80s, this was not perceived to be a threat. In fact, Poland perceived, at least Polish perceived Americans as quite developed, and they were some kind of role models for them. So there was some kind of dichotomy, something. Russians were telling, oh, these guys are bad, but the people would see Americans as interesting, as having ideas, having advanced technology, being democratic, actually, being a paragon of a democracy.
Of course, that might have been propaganda from the American, the extent to which the American government was able to get propaganda into communist countries, and because, you know, I mean, a common idea that I have anywhere, or a memory that I have, is of you know, Russians and Eastern Europeans all really having a strong desire to go to America, to have these American freedoms, to have all the benefits of capitalism. You know, this was something that they aspired to.
Well, this was like the grass is always greener on the other side. It was purely this. When they were going over there, then this illusion was, you know, slowly disappearing. But if you don't go to America, you don't know that what America is really like. So they had that illusion that America was a place to live, to be.
So you had a society in Poland under the communist rule where it was very, very clear that the government was not of the people and for the people. It was something that was imposed. How did people cope in daily life?
Well, and this is interesting thing, because such a knowledge, such an awareness was causing people to actually unite. It was a little bit like us against them, us being the people, whereas them being the government and various institutions of the government. So there was this division was very much distinct, right? And for example, when you were having one way the people were coping was by having by joking about the system. This is the way that, you know, psychological stress was relieved. And when people would meet privately, they would just joke about it. They would joke about politicians, about the system, about the newest press release, whatever. There were cabarets done based on that, and in fact, government was even allowing this, because this was a way of channeling that resentment, right?
Yeah.
So they would just keep a blind eye on this.
So in terms of daily life, were there? I mean, it was presented to the Western world, to your Western European countries, and to American people, that you know, communism was a terrible regime, and or a terrible kind of form of government. It was a dictatorship, essentially, and people were oppressed. I mean, in terms of daily life, were there very clear hardships as a result of this kind of regime? I mean, compared to Western life at the time, in the 70s and 80s, you had, you know, particularly in America, you had people, you know, were free supposedly to make as much money as they wanted. They had the biggest cars they wanted. They had everything they wanted, supposedly, materially. Was the opposite the case in Poland?
You know, in Poland, during those times of communism, there were a few things which were actually quite modern, and, you know, which we could be proud of. And one of them was education, for example. It was free. Absolutely free for anybody who wanted to
including university,
including post-university. So education was free. And that, you know, that was something that I don't see now.
In
America or in Western Europe. It was free. So thus we had a lot of people with high degrees who were actually well-educated still based on the, so-called pre-war school. So very thorough, you know, education. So this is one thing. Another thing was that 70s were times of Gierek, and these were the times when Poland received quite a lot of loans from Western Europe. So Polish would live on credit, a little bit like Americans. But that was mostly, these credits were mostly given to the state. So the state was building roads, building bridges, and investing in factories. So there was this feeling of that communism can be good, can be okay, because we also have, like Americans, we have new roads, we have factories, we have inventions. So, but this was all naturally based on, you know, this was using the money that was given to Poland as loans. But then after that, in the 80s, the crisis, you know, settled in, because you had to pay back that money. And this is when most of the 80s in the Eastern countries were about the economic crisis that eventually brought the collapse of the Eastern Bloc. So that was interesting also, because you would have enough to live, you know, you would have enough money for having food and basics, you know. So you don't have to worry about where you live or what you eat, because that was granted pretty much. And your salary was enough to cover that. But pretty much you didn't have anything like cars. It was you would have to wait for a car for 2 years to get it, because there was undersupply of it.
And Levi's jeans, for example?
Yes, everything like this. This would be difficult to get. So there was economic troubles. But that brought people very much together, like a family. I remember living in our block, and we knew all the neighbors by first and last name. So if my parents were going, for example, to France for money, they would leave us for a month with a neighbor. We would go to school, the neighbor would take care of us. There was such a close relationship, and not just one staircase. We knew pretty much all the people in our block, like 10 staircases right, 10 staircases left. So we had a group of 100 children, you know, on the streets. We all knew each other. There was, you know, some sort of
community.
Yes, very much.
And that worked.
That worked, because if somebody had something that the other person didn't have, you could go and ask, and then in return give some other favor. Right? So there was this feeling that, all right, we don't have so much, but we are pretty much...
we're in this together.
Yes, and the main subject of discussion was actually politics and the system.
And did that change then with the collapse, as you say, of the Eastern Bloc, or the fall of communism? Did that kind of community orientation among the people, did that change with the opening up of the market and?
Well, yes, because, well, that changed very quickly, actually, because as I said earlier, by 1994, all of that feeling of community was gone. Because when the system changed, actually, with the round table of 1989 in April, then the new government was formed, which was partially communistic and partially solidarity, solidarność. And then everything was allowed, so that meant everybody was taking care of the business, of the money. And it was like from this community that where people were living together, suddenly everybody just focused on their own business and literally doing business to survive. So by 1994, this communistic times, you know, seemed like long forgotten past. It was gone. People would just, you know, live separately. They wouldn't know neighbors in their staircase. This happened within just 5 years. So that was gone. But the new system, all right, if I look at the change, well, what is important about this?
I mean, other benefits?
Well, benefits clearly was that suddenly in this country the shops were empty. There was nothing in the shops. You couldn't buy anything in the shops.
That was after the fall of the
communist. That was before, but after, within in the same year, 89 borders opened. There was no trade restrictions, which meant that anything could be imported from anywhere. United States, Western Europe, from Asia. And that, you know, that was this feeling of liberation, because you could finally buy whatever you want. So mostly this liberation was that you could say whatever you want, and you could go and you had something, some goods in the shop, as opposed to what was before, that shops were empty, and you would have to arrange it through some connections to buy something.
And in terms of the new political system in Poland after the fall of communism, I mean, was there more access? I'm assuming there was more access by the ordinary person to the world of politics or political life. I mean, rather than people being appointed or chosen, you know, supposedly there was democracy, and there was, you know, I mean, we have our reservations about democracy and even in the West. And but I mean, from that point of view, was it? I mean, what I'm trying to get at here was there a tangible kind of opening up in terms of freedoms, general freedoms in political life, in social life, in you know, in this kind of area?
Well, obviously, and I think this is, in fact, that was a time of, you know, I would say the biggest democracy, and I mean, this was the time that you could do actually anything, because there were new government, there were new, everything was new, and that means that there were no laws to check, nobody was checking what you're doing, what you're saying, how you make business. This was, it's like Wild West, you know, literally anything was allowed, and that included politics. If you wanted to go to politics, you would just go into any party, like there was one or two parties, or then 10 parties from, you know, coming from Solidarity, and then you could, if this was one of the biggest bigger parties, then you could get to parliament fairly easily. So yes, I would say that at that time, this was a period maybe of 5 years until 94. Then there was relative freedom, which means that because the new system hasn't settled in yet, people were not so much, you know, checked, you know, invigilated, and so this was interesting. And a lot of things, a lot of people were mostly concerned at that time with making money, because this was the something. Yet, on the other hand, I heard some reports that people who were chosen to the round table in Poland were actually handpicked by the intelligence services, which means that they were trustworthy. They would not go against what was the plan. So you might say that this new elite that was coming up after 89 had some connections with the previous one, and it's hard to say really what, but one thing is sure, that the military and the intelligence services were still communistic, and not just for 5 years, they were communistic until recently. And this specifically I speak about intelligence services, military intelligence services.
Then what happened in, say, 1994, 1995, to start bringing back laws and regulations and to start to control things once more?
Well, mostly what happens, there were a lot of scandals, mostly scandals related to politicians abusing political power for gain, for material gain, for money. About import scandals, there was a scandal called FOS, which was a fund that was set up by Polish government quietly to pay Polish debt, to buy Polish debt on international markets and for very little, and then pay it back, just like Romania has done. So, and that money was not used for the purpose, but it was simply by several people. These were millions of money. These were money taken in trains outside of Poland, and this was defrauded, this was taken away by some people. So these kind of things were 93, 4, 5, 6, these kind of scandals, you know, were most probably used, or you could even speculate that they were created in order to reinstitute, reinstall the laws of the past only with a slight change.
So today, what's it like today in, for example, Poland, for the average person, and in other Eastern European countries that you that you've traveled to, that you're aware of? What is, in terms of life in Western Europe and America, I mean, what is it like?
Well, as far as you look at the life today, well, you can see that the business-wise, the business practices are pretty much the same as in the United States. They were taken and implanted and instituted by most of the American corporations,
this
which
is
are
globalization or
yes,
free
this is
market
it.
Or
so
liberal.
Poland or Hungary or Czechoslovakia, Czech or Slovakia, they are all like little copies of United States as far as the business practice is concerned, with most of the biggest American corporations present over there. This is one thing. So the business is like, this is it. As far as living, well,
in terms of culture, for example, has there been much infiltration of American culture, for example, into...
Very much. This is another area where Poland has taken a lot from America. And it's like sometimes we have jokes among people that we used to be whatever, Republic of Russia, 25th or whatever. Now we are 23rd, 54th state of United States. So we went, and this is often said that we went from one extreme of being a republic, being a republic of Soviet Union, into being a state of United States.
And when people turn on their televisions, is there a lot of American television that they see? And
absolutely.
When you go to the movies, it's American films.
Mostly American films.
Turn on the radio, it's American music.
American music, yes. American news. And pretty much how you see how the news agencies and media work, it's like copy of American things, American. So
and then would it be the same thing in Hungary and in Romania? And in,
absolutely. I've been to, I've traveled a lot to Hungary and Romania, and it doesn't differ. It's the same like in Poland, which means they introduce the same culture, the same things, which are mostly American. So
I think you were in Hungary recently. I think you were there when this recent crisis erupted.
Yes.
Can you tell us what it was that set that off?
Well, this was quite an interesting situation because in May, the current Prime Minister Ferenc Gyurcsány, he had a speech, a secret speech to the Politburo or the Bureau of the Party of the Hungarian Socialist Party, and he wanted to convince the hard-headed socialists, the leaders of that party, to introduce the reforms, and he has used quite strong language, and he has said a few things that maybe he wouldn't say publicly, like that for the 4 years they didn't say any, they didn't say truth about the state of Hungarian economy to the voters. So before elections, they were actually keeping that data hidden, or they, in other words, they were lying about it because they didn't reveal it. So and that recording of 25 minutes speech was later, recently, 17th of I believe September, was released and made a huge storm. This was the basis, let's say, this was the trigger event that caused you know, what followed afterward. And what happens afterwards was that the Fidesz, which is an opposition party, in the upcoming municipal elections, they seized the opportunity and they started to criticize the government and asked, wanted them to leave, especially the Ferenc Gyurcsány. And
so
nobody knows.
The tape was released just prior to an important municipal election in Budapest,
which are taking tomorrow, which is on Sunday, the 1st of October.
And there were riots in the...
Yes, which caused, and nobody knows how it happens, but there were riots actually for 2 or 3 days in a row in the center of Budapest, in the in front of the parliament. There was a tent city over there. and people were protesting, people were marching, and cars are being burned, police, there were clashes with police, a TV station was actually, there was an assault, an attack on TV station.
By the rioters.
By the rioters. Uh-huh. And then...
Were these ordinary people or was this...
Well, it's hard to say. The media is saying that these were mostly skinheads and football fans or soccer fans, right? Mm-hmm. But I've seen some pictures and I'm not sure that this is the correct information. Maybe there were some people who were genuinely against such a situation, but there were a lot of people who were most probably went to streets because Fidesz, which is the opposition, was trying to use that opportunity and show the Hungarian Socialist Party's real face.
The government, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's interesting you pointed out that there was a tent city that appeared because the use of tents was also what we saw these in other so-called revolutions,
yes.
such as in Georgia, in the Ukraine.
Yes.
And in those cases, these tent cities were being paid for and supplied by the United States to the opposition forces.
Yes, and I have no facts about that, but I would not be surprised if that would be also the case in Hungary, because clearly there was somebody behind these people who was the driving them to do what
and
they were doing.
And there was somebody behind the timing of the release of this tape.
Yes.
Is there a reason to believe that the, or would you say that the ruling, the sitting government in Hungary is not in favor with the Americans? I mean, are they? Because this is what I'm thinking here. If what we're suggesting might be the case, where this situation where the government was exposed and there were riots and there were tent cities, and that this might have been supported by the Americans to some extent, that would suggest that the Americans were supporting the opposition party and therefore they had some problem with the government, the present government.
I agree with you, Joe. The reason is that when there was a Yugoslavian invasion war, remember, this was the Fidesz, which was in power at that time. Viktor Orban, who is the main guy of the opposition, he was the one who was in power when the Americans were using Hungary as a platform to send their planes and troops to Yugoslavia, let's say planes, right? So he was very close with Americans, whereas when the Socialist Party got back to government, which was 3 or 4 years ago, then probably Americans fell out of favor so much as they were before.
Mm-hmm.
And you might say that this was the Fidesz and some American forces, let's say, with American support, could have been taking the opportunity or even arranging this release of this tape.
Do you think there's going to be any significant repercussions from what has happened last week, from these riots and this the releasing of this tape? Is it possible that the current government might be in trouble at these elections, or?
Well, I don't think so, because people very much don't like the Fidesz, because what I was observing during elections, maybe...
What kind of party is the Fidesz?
Fidesz is a right wing, right?
Right-wing.
So this is the MSP is the left wing, which are former communists, and Fidesz is the...
So they're ideological partners with Americans.
Yes,
yes. Right-wing.
And, you know, I don't think what is important to remember that the subject of these tapes were very unpopular reforms that the government of Ferenc Gyurcsány has to go through, because they were spending money without telling people about it. They created quite a big budgetary hole, and now they have a deficit of 10%. So he has to introduce very restrictive monetary policy, which means he wants to seriously increase taxes and cut on public spending in order to control the situation, mainly on healthcare. Mm-hmm. He wants to make people pay for the healthcare. So this is very unpopular. This is, people don't understand that, and he was trying to convince the hard-headed communists to agree on this, and this is why the speech came. So there will be more taxes. So if we look at this point of view, you might say that his party was not telling the truth, because exactly they wanted to get to the point where they will have justification to increase the taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a form of control of society.
So the pressure on the streets, even if it doesn't bring Fidesz back into power, it serves to continue putting pressure on the government to maintain these reforms, which, the way you describe them, would certainly be in line with the kind of globalist reforms that the
exactly.
United States is pushing
yeah.
for around the world.
Exactly. So he has to have those reforms ready, and he created a situation where that will be possible by whatever means.
Hmm. So how, I mean, this may be getting a little deeper into conspiracy theories.
Well,
but
we can speculate.
We can speculate. Okay. How much control do the Americans, for example, the American government, the Bush government exert, and the neocons exert over Polish politics or Hungarian politics?
Well, you have to remember one thing, that one of the advisors to President of the United States was Mr. Brzeziński. And Mr. Brzeziński
was National Security Advisor for Jimmy Carter.
Jim Carter, exactly. Mm. And as you know, he's a known person in America. He's a known person in America. He's also a known person in Poland. He speaks Polish. And he's regarded as, he's considered a very successful person. He's considered to be...
He's a role model.
He's a role model in a way, yes. So Polish see him as a national hero of some sort. Mm. So there is this this cooperation between, let's say, there's this similar ideology in a way with some of the Polish politicians that represent what Mr. Brzeziński is doing. But if I go back to the beginning of the first Gulf War, then Polish made some favors for the Americans in Iraq, because Poland was in Iraq before. So there were some agents that were actually taken out of Iraq by Polish Secret Service. So you could say that there was a very friendly relationship in terms of intelligence agencies, right? They were cooperating with each other, and we were always friendly. Whenever there was a change, all the politicians were speaking friendly about the United States. They all wanted to join NATO, and they all wanted to cooperate. So there was always talk of cooperation, and there were favors given to the United States. But that was in the 90s, and it was not particularly big favors. They were not something that would be considered to be improper or not politically correct. There were just favors. And now, these days, we have a different situation, because we have CIA planes landing in Poland. And we have President of Poland going to USA and then to Israel. And his twin brother being a prime minister. And they all have clearly contacts with the government of the United States.
Mm-hmm. So you'd say that the current Polish government is very much pro-American and pro-Israel, as opposed to not pro-American and pro-Israel?
Yes, I would certainly say they are very much more pro-American than they are towards the Eastern, towards Russia, where they constantly fight with Russia on every level. And speaking of which, there was recently a change in the intelligence agencies. They liquidated or they shut down the military intelligence agency, which was under supervision of army. They closed it. They are closing it today. And from tomorrow, there are two agencies which are civil run, which are civil servants doing counterintelligence as well as military intelligence. And these people report directly to the government. And you ask me, well, what's so special about it? Well, I tell you that the military was still in control of the Russian-friendly people, because these were people from the communist times who were still generals, and they were in the army. So, because these new presidents couldn't handle them, they had to introduce, they had to shut down the agency and create new ones with their own people who will be friendly to United States. So now we have this thing going on. So you might say that they are neocons, only they are very quiet about it. Mm. They simply go and visit United States and Israel, and they are not talking about any details of what's going on really.
It seems to me that Poland's importance in terms of on the international stage increased, at least as far as European countries and America were concerned, when they joined the European Union along with nine other Eastern European, mm-hmm. more or less, countries, mm-hmm. 2 years ago in 2004, you know,
yes.
because Poland was, of those 10 countries, Poland was by far the biggest.
The biggest,
I think
yes.
that's 40 million people or something. So, I mean, while the European Union is supposedly, you know, based on equality and every country, regardless of size, has an equal vote and stuff, that's nonsense, you know. The influence is dictated by size and by gross domestic product and various other factors. So Poland is by far the biggest of these 10 countries that joined the European Union 2 years ago. And obviously in terms of American interest in controlling or having an influence in the European Union and the direction of policies within the European Union, obviously Poland was up for grabs type of thing as it entered the the European Union. Has there been a change of government
in Poland
since in the past 2 or 3 years?
Yes, the government was changed last year in 2005.
Okay. And the government before that was
left party, left side.
Okay.
So and they were, well, they were also quite open towards Americans.
Yeah,
but
because they also supported the aggression in Iraq.
Yes,
yes, they sent troops. Mm-hmm. So they were supportive, but
they were also during the discussions, the final discussions a couple of years ago about Europe and how it would be organized, they were one of the people that were very set against the French propositions.
Yes, they
on
were trying
the
to
voting and
throw their weight around a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So you see, despite of the fact that both of these governments were from different spectrum of the political stage, from different side, they both supported the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And what is interesting as far as Europe is concerned, that Poland always considers whether to be with America or NATO or to be with EU, with United Europe.
European
and
Union.
European Union, yes. And so this is always, there are always, there's always whether we do something, so the politicians are asking, is it good for our European allies? Or if you do something that Americans don't like, is it good with our American allies? So, and it varies. Sometimes it goes more towards EU, Europe. Sometimes it goes towards America. But in terms of military operation, Poland is standing behind. Poland was part of the coalition of the willing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Had troops in Iraq, yeah.
Yes, in Afghanistan as well.
But then that sets up something interesting, because you've been saying that the Polish military is also one of the last bastions of generals who are from the communist epoch and who were in support of the Soviet Union and now Russia, or have the desire to have a closer alliance with Russia. So you have a very strong... You have a military that would have these kinds of generals, and then being put in a position of supporting the coalition, of becoming part of the coalition of the willing. That must have been difficult for
these
generals.
Yes, and that's why there's the struggle. That's why the new intelligence agency is created, because this is a reflection of that struggle, that some part of that military, not necessarily intelligence, military, which means generals, the army, they are still in the communistic mind frame and they want to align themselves more with Russia, whereas, you know, the intelligence agencies are fully cooperating with Americans. And there is this, that's why there was this new agency created. So there's a full control of these agencies by the government, not the army, which is still slightly or in part, you know, gravitating towards Russia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there is the struggle.
And it seems to me that the Poland's participation in the invasion of Iraq, the reason, as I see it, at least on one level, why any countries became part of the coalition of the willing was the fact that America held out the opportunity or the possibility of very lucrative deals.
Yes.
In terms of plundering Iraq.
Exactly.
And it seems that Poland
has gotten some of the contracts.
They saw an opportunity to boost their own kind of wealth or the wealth of the country, supposedly, and maybe get their hand in on some of the oil deals or the access to oil from Iraq.
Absolutely, this is absolutely the case, and in fact, as far as I remember, the Prime Minister was back in 2002 was very much lobbying for Poland going to war with Iraq, exactly because it was an opportunity later to have some contract with oil and rebuilding of Iraq, right?
Yeah, after they destroyed it.
Yes, exactly. So, and there's one more thing I want to say is that if you look at the globe and if you fly from United States to Middle East, you have to fly over Poland. It's naturally on the flight path, because Earth has the curvature. Mm-hmm. So they like flying to Afghanistan. They reload. Actually, they reload the fuel, refuel exactly in Poland, over Poland. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense also with those allegations about CIA prison planes landing in Poland.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier on. That's the whole hot topic of the CIA's extraordinary rendition yes. program, which is a strange term for essentially kidnapping people and torturing them. Kidnapping them in one country, flying them into another country or several other countries for the purpose of torture. And while it's recently come out as a result of European Union investigation and report about pretty much every country in Europe or almost every country in Europe hosted these planes, if only for a stopover. But in Poland, there was
only two countries that were mentioned and possible locations of the secret CIA prisons, and this was Poland and Romania.
Yeah.
And as far as I was reading, because these days these articles from the last year disappeared from the net already, so I had to rely on my memory today to find things about this, was that there was some secret agent training facility close to the airport there where CIA planes were repeatedly landing, which would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were bringing anybody and there was a facility which was short driving distance from the airport, then that makes sense that they could also use that facility in case they would like to have some services by the Polish, interrogation services agents.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to allow a plane to stop over in your country for a few hours with one of these unfortunate individuals who are abducted by the CIA, but it's another thing to have an actual detention facility on your soil and to allow the CIA to go about its dirty job. I mean, that to me suggests a deeper involvement.
And there was one, and it was last year the discussion wasn't about landing planes, but the discussion really was about whether there are prisons. This year when I was checking the media already, there was a spin which totally removed the information about there being any prisons, only about planes landing. So since they took it off, the internet, it must suggest that we may speculate that there were actually some facilities, Polish facilities used for that.
Mm. And just by way of explanation on this CIA's extraordinary rendition program, also known as abduction and torture, I mean, what seems to be the case is that this is basically, obviously it's a part of the war on terror. It's presented by the American government as a necessary part of the war on terror, where they identify and arrest individuals in any countries. This has happened to German citizens, Canadian citizens, but a lot of people from Pakistan, Afghanistan, who were arrested by local authorities or arrested by the American authorities themselves in those countries and taken on planes and taken to various countries around the world most notably Morocco, Syria, Jordan, little enclaves, American enclaves, and handed over to certain people were for torture to extract from them admissions of guilt about terrorist activities, Muslim, Islamic terrorist activities. From the reports that have come out, and these are freely available on news sites on the internet, a lot of these people are innocent, completely innocent, and they were the purpose was to extract by force out of them false confessions to their participation in Islamic terrorism. And it seems that the whole goal was to simply use these people to create evidence for Islamic terrorism, that it exists when it does not exist in the way that the American government and the Israeli government and the British government claim.
The Polish government as well.
And the Polish government and many other governments claim, because that's it doesn't exist in the way they claim it, as this organized worldwide Islamic terrorism. But they needed to create the evidence for their accusation, for their claims. And this is how they're doing it. This is the core of the CIA rendition program.
And beyond that, once the news gets out that the CIA is kidnapping and torturing Arabs and Muslims from around the world, then that is going to perhaps create the very conditions that they claim are already there, as people become righteously indignant at what's going on, and some of them may be able to be manipulated into
just providing more evidence.
Yes.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
It also serves to scare the hell out of people, you know, because they can release this handful of people who they, you know, say, you know, yeah, they were innocent, and of course they'll put on a few little show trials, and you know, a couple hands will be slapped, and really nothing will be done about the whole process. And so not only does it create the whole, you know, create potentially real, real terrorism, because people are going to start, you know, actually fighting back against it instead of it being simply manufactured. But it also serves to, I'm reminded of the story of the Arab man who was captured, and I don't recall exactly where, but we had it on the science page, and he was captured and. The torture that he underwent was the torturer used a scalpel and made many, many cuts on his penis. And this story was just completely, I mean, it was just, you know, completely disgusting and horrifying and like terrifying. And of course, you know, I mean, you sit there and you think like, oh, it's great that, you know, this guy got out and, you know, oh, you know, we'll have justice and everything. But I mean, the obvious point of releasing stories like that is to, you know, at least partially to keep everyone in line, because now you're all, you know, terrified of, you know, that, oh my God, that's going to happen to me or to my child or.
Everybody's a potential terrorist.
Obviously, it casts serious suspicion.
And also
a question over. Over the alleged confessions or the convictions that the American government has had of supposed Islamic terrorists who were subjected to this kind of torture and who obviously would say anything. And then the American government lauds these convictions as evidence of Islamic terrorism. It's just ridiculous. It's very obviously a manipulation.
And we should also remember about the fear factor that this, when you release such information like George Bush yesterday that there are such prisons that outside of United States, what kind of message it tells to American people.
And also the recent news stories about the fact that ordinary American citizens can be terrorists. Now, ordinary citizens who are not necessarily Muslim or have any association with any supposed Islamic terrorist groups, that they can be terrorists, and they also can have their penises cut.
And they can be taken away from the United States for interrogation. And when you put those two things together, then it's clearly that there is an association made between, you know, domestic terrorists and prisons outside of the United States for the purpose of extracting, you know, information from such terrorists.
Very subtle warning.
Yes.
You mentioned that in doing some research for this today, you found that some of the articles that discussed the secret detention centers had been removed from the internet.
Yes.
You said a little earlier that under the communist rule, there was a very clear division between the government and the media and the people, and people were aware they were living in a government that had been imposed upon them, and there was no trust of the government. There was no trust of the media.
Yes.
You've described now how in the post-communist epoch, the media has become very Americanized.
Yes.
Do people have the same distrust of the government in the media that they had then, or do they think that now they have a free media and, you know, what's the situation?
Well, generally what I see among Polish is that they are generally distrustful towards politicians. So they don't trust politicians. They generally, and this is all has grounds, because what politicians are doing in Poland is really, it's a little bit ridiculous, you know, the kind of scandals that surface. So there is very big distrust towards any politicians in general. However, I think that maybe after 2000, the people started to kind of forgot a little bit about the press and the media being in the hands of the government, because we have so many private media. And they kind of thought, oh, all right, so there is a public television and radio, and these still tell lies, or the government side of the story. But there is this plethora of so-called independent media, which tells more or less the real story. But this, you know, and when I talk with people, they tend to bring up the sources like the biggest Polish radio, Radio Z, or the RMF FM, another radio, or portals like web portals like onet.pl as sources of information. Whereas clearly, when you start reading them and you compare them to the stories in America on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News especially, then it becomes apparent that there is a spin to the news. And this was so apparent during the attack on Lebanon, how the Israeli part of the story was quantity-wise, you know, in terms of quantity, how much they were talking about casualties and what Israelis experienced, as opposed to what the Lebanese experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And all the pictures of the victims of the attacks, of the Israeli attacks, were surgically removed from the press, whether this was a paper press or internet press.
So it sounds like it's pretty much like it is everywhere else.
Unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, same shit, different day.
Only maybe that one thing that I still notice in discussions, that people are, I don't know, intrinsically not trusting government. Which they don't trust government when we have two brothers governing in Poland, and they are called Kaczyńscy. Kaczka means a duck in Polish, so we called it Kaczorland. And we are making fun of them, and we are not trusting them. And this is one thing that is quite common, that people don't trust them.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you mentioned at the beginning that under the communist government, people were aware that they were living under an overt dictatorship, and
yes,
they knew that they had no, had very restricted kind of rights and
yes,
liberties. But now people supposedly have liberties and have rights and can do much more and can buy lots more. But basically what you've said is that the only thing that changed really was the things that people can buy in a way. I mean, is that the case? Is there, in terms of, you know, in terms of speaking to this idea that is prevalent in America particularly, that once communism is gone, everything changes. Has everything changed in terms of in the big picture?
Well, as you said, what changed was the so-called economic freedom, or you could see it as economic slavery, because a few people have lots of money and most of the society lives on the verge of lives for $200-$300 a month. So you could say that, yeah, that you know, this is what changed, that you have more goods on the market. But as far as civil liberties, there was some freedom at the beginning of 90s. And that freedom, probably from the time that the post-communists got back to power, which was around 1996 or 7, this was, they were returning to the same system. And what happened after 2001, after 9/11, this is like what's happening to every other country in the world, like Canada, Australia, UK, we are losing freedoms by the day, and the terrorism is used as justification for shutting down freedoms left and right.
Was there, when the Iraq war started and Poland supported it and committed troops, what was the public opinion in Poland? Was it for or against the war?
Well, when I was reading the commentaries on the web pages, on the web, you know, web information servers, news servers, then I would notice that most people were against it.
Okay, so basically, under communism, you had a government, and you knew you had no rights, and the government could do what it wanted. It could wage war, or it could enact any policies it chose, and mm-hmm. people could do nothing. Now, under capitalist and open and free Poland and part of the European Union, in terms of that level of government, nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. Only the perception of people.
The Polish government, the Polish democratic government, still. Joins a war, regardless yes. of the opinion of the Polish people.
Yes.
But the good thing is that they can now buy Levi jeans. So that's what capitalism means to Poland.
Is education and healthcare still free in Poland?
Well, education is still so-called daytime education, which means, you know, daytime universities are free still. They are not in Hungary, for example. But healthcare is still free, but what they offer in the free packet of services is really minimal, so you have to pay for it, actually. Mm-hmm. So when I look at, you know, what we have now in Poland, what we had in the 80s, for example, we didn't have all those goods, we didn't have cars, but we have a fairly decent healthcare system without any troubles to access it. We had a fairly decent education system. So I'm not, you know, praising communism here, but obviously in terms of enslavement and in terms of, you know, what's going on in this society, I would say that we are more slaves now than we were under the communistic rules, because we are slaves of the government and we are slaves of the money, or lack of the money. So, and this is, believe me, many people tell that they feel that they are much more enslaved now, and they struggle to make ends meet.
And that's maybe the problem with America, in that Americans have never had that kind of a contrast. Americans, obviously, you know, living under the same kind of system that people in Poland are living under, or a more extreme version of it. They are slaves also, slaves to money and slaves to big business and big government, but they just don't know it because they have nothing mm-hmm. to compare it to. And obviously they don't have the history of mistrust of government
yes.
either.
You know, the trouble now, I also see one thing that in the 80s it was very simple, us and them. And what most of the Polish can't cope with is that it's not that simple anymore, right? It's not anymore us about them, because there's many us.
Mm-hmm.
And many them, you know, there's no one public that is being governed by the dictatorship. But, and you know, so this is difficult because they cannot really understand what's going on. Really, like they knew very well, oh, the government was bad, was evil. The press was propaganda. It's not like this anymore, and they cannot recognize what's really going on. So this is, in a way, much more difficult for people who are living now in Poland and Eastern Europe, because they don't trust government, but they don't understand what's the real situation, because it is all being carefully managed.
Well, we will leave it there. We'd like to thank Oliver for coming in and talking with us about his observations on Poland and Eastern Europe, pre-communist and post-communist. For more information on these subjects or to discuss tonight's podcast, you can come to the Signs of the Times forum. There is a link to the forum from the Signs page, and you'll find the Signs page at www.signs-of-the-times.org. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.